Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a weekly show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Dan Hawkins, Senior Vice President for Policy and Research at the National Association of Community Health Centers, a trade organization supporting the nation's health centers who provide care for 27 million underserved Americans. Lori Robertson also checks in, managing editor of factcheck.org, looks at misstatements about health policy in the public domain, separating the fake from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Dan Hawkins of the National Association of Community Health Centers.
We're speaking today with Dan Hawkins, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Research at the National Association of Community Health Centers, a trade organization representing the nation's community health centers, serving the health needs of some 27 million Americans. Before joining NAC in 1981, Dan served as Director of Migrant and Community Health Centers in South Texas, serving the needs of the region's migrant populations. He was assistant to former HHS Secretary Joseph Califano under President Carter. Mr. Hawkins teaches health policy at George Washington University and has also lectured at Harvard and Johns Hopkins. He's been named one of the 1,000 most influential health policymakers in America. Dan, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure being here.
And first of all, for all of our listeners, full transparency, we are a proud member of the National Association of Community Health Centers. But Dan, you've been an activist in the health center movement now for 40 years, served with the National Association for decades, working on public policy issues in Washington that ensure that millions of Americans who are served by health centers continue to have access to quality and integrated primary care. And sometimes folks just don't know about the fundamental mission of community health centers, the care model, the patient populations who are served by the health centers. Can you share that story with our listeners?
To me, the best description of the fundamental mission of community health centers and the best description of my job over the past almost 50 years was provided by my goddaughter and the daughter of my boss, CEO Tom Van Coverden, Debbie Van Coverden. One day in school, teacher asked her, well, what does your daddy do for a living? She said, well, he tries to help poor people get health care. And that's about the best job description I've ever heard. The model, Mark, for health centers has been there since the beginning in 1965. And the purpose is to meet the people it serves where they're at. Locations where there are few or no other providers, especially in rural and inner city urban communities. It means hours of operation, evenings and weekends, when working people can actually get to the doctor. It means making the cost affordable, especially for those who are low income or poor. It means services more than just medical and more than just health, transportation, outreach, counseling. It means staffing that virtually all health centers in America, a majority of those who work at the health center come from the community being served. They speak the language of the community being served. And of course, the key part of the model, this is healthcare of the people, by the people, for the people, with community boards, a majority of whom are registered patients at the health center.
Well, Dan, we are particularly pleased to welcome you during National Health Center Week, that one week where the health center world galvanizes to highlight the great work that's being done in our communities and by your organization, the National Association for Community Health Centers as well. You served on the front lines of care delivery. I'm not sure our listeners know that you were a VISTA volunteer first and then the director of a migrant health center. Talk with us about those early experiences. How did the experience of being a VISTA volunteer and then the director of a health center form your work and really formed your current work?
Well, it really set the path for my life. As a young VISTA volunteer, one of our jobs down there in Deep South Texas was to bring representatives of the community together and ask them what they needed and then figure out how we could help them achieve those objectives. And the top priority was healthcare, because that was a home base area for many of the nation's migrant and seasonal farm workers. We found a program that had been signed into law by President John F. Kennedy that provided support for migrant health care. With that, we opened a community health center actually on Cinco de Mayo in 1970. The first patient who came through the door that day was a diabetic whose leg was so gangrenous it was amputated at the knee the next day. When the physician on call asked him, "Why did you not come see me in my office?" He said, "Well, because I can't afford it. And I have a sick child. I'm still paying the hospital $5 a week. In my family, my daughter comes first, my wife comes second, and I come last." That confirmed for me the desperate need, as well as the value and importance of the work that we do.
Well, it also confirmed the need, I think, for many Americans of why the Affordable Care Act was so important. And Dan, you had a seat at the table during those policy discussions in the creation of the ACA, and CHCs were expected to provide medical homes for more than 20 million newly insured Americans. 5 years later, that policy change in Washington now threatens some of the gains that have been made. What has the Affordable Care Act done to advance health care in the country, and what's at risk in the current climate?
The Affordable Care Act has essentially extended coverage to more than 27 million Americans who are today newly insured for the first time. That includes 17 million people covered by Medicaid. And by the way, of those 17 million new Medicaid beneficiaries, 7 million are being cared for at health centers. The ACA also extended private insurance to 11 million people. 1.5 million of them are getting care at health centers today. Finally, the ACA provided $11 billion for health centers. It allowed the funding of more health centers and more health center sites. 250 new health centers and 3,500 new sites, new communities that are getting health care in a direct way for the first time. And those sites are serving 9 million new patients. Secondly, it expanded coverage for dental, oral health care, and for behavioral health and for vision care. There are now more than 250 health centers that are funded for dental care, and 350 health centers have been funded for mental or behavioral health, including care for the opioid epidemic. Mm-hmm. And today, 87% of all health centers offer behavioral health care.
Well, you know, Dan, health centers are often the place where innovations develop. They develop because they are necessary and responsive to the needs of the community. Primary care, medicine, dentistry, behavioral health, all co-located. And now we think of this as integrated care. And HHS Secretary Alex Azar recently spoke at a gathering in Washington and said this model wasn't just part of the solution, it is the solution. What is next seen about how the model actually improves outcomes and why it should be a model for primary care writ large in this country?
Well, dozens of studies that have been done over the years have pointed to the fact that people who use health centers for their care have better health, more improved health, have access to more services at an affordable rate, and as a result, their health is significantly improved over the long run. You know, we have 16,000 oral health professionals working at health centers today. We have almost 11,000 behavioral health professionals, and we have nearly 12,000 nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and nurse midwives. And as you know, Margaret, that is the future of healthcare. The number of physicians who are providing primary health care, family medicine, pediatrics, is declining dramatically. And yet important providers at health centers today are the nurse practitioners and the physician assistants and nurse midwives. They are providers in their own right, and they are fabulous.
We're speaking today with Dan Hawkins, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Research at the National Association of Community Health Centers, serving the health needs of some 27 million Americans. The health centers are really on the forefront of the most pressing problems facing the American population. And I think, obviously, one of the major problems that we face is the devastating opioid crisis that's underway. More than 60,000 deaths per year. And recovery and treatment options, while there are few elsewhere, health centers have been very effective ambulatory medicated-assisted treatment options, and they're saving lives. But also talk about the work that health centers are doing with our nation's veterans. So often we're hearing about the inability for veterans to get access to health care. I wonder if you could talk about those two pressing public health problems.
Sure. The opioid crisis is the single most devastating public health crisis in America today. More than 60,000 people are losing their lives to this crisis every year. That's more than the number of people who are killed in auto accidents. And there is care available. One of the places they can get that care is at a health center. Health centers are caring for more than 1 million people with substance use disorder today. That's four times the number of people they were serving in 2010, plus 1 million more with mental health issues, stress, anxiety, depression, and the like. And health centers, unlike so many other providers, run toward the fire, like our nation's first responders, not away from it. In Flint, when the water was polluted and people were being affected by tainted water, it was the health center who identified the problem began providing care immediately. During the Zika virus, one square mile of Miami was identified as a Zika hot zone. And it turned out that three-quarters of the people living in that hot zone were patients of a community health center. All of this is what health centers are doing. You mentioned veterans. Health centers are serving more than 350,000 veterans today across the country. And I believe, frankly, that's an undercount.
I think it is.
Because there's so many that come, don't even identify themselves as a veteran. And what they're seeking is health care. Health centers are working hard with the Veterans Administration, VA health clinics, and the like, to ensure that the special care that our nation's veterans need for post-traumatic stress syndrome and other kinds of health-related conditions that flow from their service to our country can be organized and coordinated for care. There are 500,000 pregnant women in this country. That's one out of every eight who deliver in America today who get their care at a health center. And 300,000 of them are delivered by the health center. There are 2.5 million diabetics who are getting care at a health center, and almost 4 million women are receiving breast and cervical cancer screenings. Health centers are providing millions of immunizations to children. And so you can go up and down the age, gender, and healthcare scale, and it's health centers that are on the front lines. They're the ones running toward the fire.
Well, Dan, I would add the health center role in having responded to the HIV epidemic early on. And what all this really speaks to then is this is high complexity care that needs to be done to a really high performance model. And if we're going to do that, we have to train the next generation. And I'd love for you to speak a little bit about the broad view of what the health center world is doing to train the next generation. We saw progress within the Affordable Care Act with the teaching health centers. You know about the work with the nurse practitioner residency program and others. Why don't you give our listeners an overview from your perspective of that training?
Sure. One thing that that we said at health centers and is that if we're going to have a workforce of the future to serve the population that so desperately needs them, then we're going to have to grow our own. And so health centers have participated in training programs for nurse practitioners, PAs, nurse midwives. And today, nurse practitioners alone are 36% of the clinical workforce at health centers. There are a couple of workforce programs that health centers rely on heavily. One's called the National Health Service Corps, and it provides scholarship assistance and loan repayment for not only physicians, but dentists who train and then go out and serve in an underserved community as a way of payback for the financial assistance they received. And there's a little over 10,000 folks working at sites across the country who have been assisted through the National Health Service Corps, and more than 60% of them are actually working at health centers. Number two is something called the Teaching Health Centers Program, which was a program created under the Affordable Care Act and is now training something like 600 primary care physician residents. 300 health centers are doing primary care residency training across the country. That needs to happen in dentistry. needs to happen in behavioral health care, all the way across and down the line.
Well, Dan, you know, you're really covering the waterfront of the work that community health centers are doing, but they're also leading in innovations. We're seeing the high uptake of telemedicine as a useful tool to connect remote clinicians. I know when Dr. Francis Collins was thinking about launching his 1 million live study on genomics with the All of Us programs, he reached out to community health centers to be part of that initial cohort. And I wonder if you could talk about how health centers are really leading the edge on research and also adopting new tools in their delivery system.
From my time in South Texas almost 50 years ago, I appreciated very deeply, having come from Connecticut, it struck me firmly just how difficult it is to secure the right kind of care when you live in a rural area. Telehealth wasn't really around in those days. Thank God it is today. And more than half of all health centers use telehealth, for example, for behavioral health. In fact, I think it's 60% use telehealth more generally. And it's more like 80% in states like Alaska and Tennessee and Washington State. So that is so vitally important. And you mentioned the Precision Medicine Initiative at NIH. Health centers have been leading participants in the Million Lives campaigns and so many other precision medicine efforts undertaken by the premier organizations and agencies of government engaged in healthcare. And that is so vitally important because 90% of those served by health centers are poor or low income. Doesn't mean that their health care has to be poor. Everybody, poor, rich, or in between, deserve the highest quality health care that can be made available for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what health centers strive to do.
You know, Dan, we've always appreciated and recognized that there's really been tremendous bipartisan support for community health centers. But of course, a lot of uncertainty as we look to the political future. And even this year, there was the threat of health center funding falling off the cliff, as we've all learned to say from you all. What policies are you and NAC focusing on to ensure that health centers remain strong in their quest?
Well, we continue to work hard to earn and deserve the bipartisan support of members of Congress. There are heroes on both sides of the aisle. I know we're in a very heavily partisan time today, but we pride ourselves on bipartisan support. And I don't care what the reason is for a policymaker to support health centers. Is it because they serve a population that otherwise wouldn't have access to care because of who they are, where they live? Or is it because health centers are more effective and efficient? Studies have shown that care provided at a health center is up to 24% less expensive and more effective than that provided elsewhere, including some of our nation's pristine medical centers. And that's because the striving is to provide that care the most economically and the most effectively as can possibly be done. And so our job is to continue to seek out that bipartisan support. Today, our effort is to seek a permanent fix to that funding cliff, because the way it's working is that every couple of years we have to come around and fight that good fight to keep the funding coming in order for health centers to do the great work that they do. And we've had some good response, positive response, from key members of Congress, and I feel confident that we will solve the funding cliff on a permanent basis in the very near future.
We're speaking today with Dan Hawkins, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Research at the National Association of Community Health Centers. You can learn more about their work by going to nachc.org, or you can follow them on Twitter at NACHC. Dan, happy National Health Center Week, and thank you so much for your tireless advocacy and for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
The Trump administration issued a final rule on August 1st to expand short-term, limited-duration insurance plans. These plans were limited to a duration of less than 3 months under an Obama-era rule that took effect in 2017. But the new Trump administration rule would allow plans to be extended for up to 3 years. The plans will likely be cheaper than other options on the individual market. That's because they don't have to meet Affordable Care Act requirements, including covering the 10 essential health benefits, restricting how premiums can be priced, prohibiting annual or lifetime benefit caps, and prohibiting insurers from denying coverage or pricing plans based on health status. The nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation explained in an issue brief earlier this year that short-term policies have lower premiums than ACA-compliant policies, quote, because short-term policies offer less insurance protection. A review of two insurance websites showed that the cheapest short-term plan cost 20% or less of the premium for the cheapest ACA bronze level plan. The short-term plans could siphon off healthy individuals, leaving the individual market with a higher concentration of unhealthy and therefore higher cost people. The administration estimates that in 2019, when there is no longer a penalty for not having ACA-compliant coverage, between 100,000 and 200,000 people would drop ACA exchange coverage to purchase short-term plans instead. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. When Wichita, Kansas nurse practitioner Michael Warzuski learned of the harsh and often fatal conditions that expectant mothers endure in sub-Saharan Africa, all because they live too far from a medical clinic, he thought there had to be a way to fill that need. Believing that every human being should have access to quality health care, he came up with a solution. Clinic in a Can, transforming shipping containers into fully equipped mobile clinics and operating rooms that can be shipped anywhere in the world where there is a need.
When you walk in the inside, you will believe or think that you're inside your doctor's office or inside the clinical environment. Maybe you're in an emergency room or an ICU unit. They look exactly the same.
Warzuski learned from his early iterations that gas-powered generators could be problematic in low-resource areas and switched all of his portable clinics to solar power, which he says was a game-changer.
There's no part of the world that does not have sunlight. And so 6 solar panels on the top and 8 batteries is enough to run a clinic for 18 hours.
Since its founding a decade ago, Clinics in a Can have been delivered to war-torn Sudan, to earthquake-ravaged Haiti, and more recently to Santa Rosa, California, an area decimated by the wildfires that also destroyed the main community health center there. Santa Rosa Community Health Center CEO Naomi Fuchs says that the portable clinic provided a lifeline for her patients and was a godsend for her providers.
These are converted shipping containers that arrive fully equipped as a medical exam room. These have been an outstanding way to respond to emergencies.
The roughly 120 square feet shipping container clinics are designed to support workflow and to become a permanent fixture in low resource areas, serving as long-term primary care centers as well.
A containerized clinic is something that's a turnkey. We equip it with the best equipment, and we ship it as a completed project that once on the ground, within 20, 30 minutes, it's ready to be used.
Clinic in a Can, a professionally outfitted shipping container, fully equipped with medical and surgical equipment, ready for deployment anywhere in the world where disaster strikes, solar-powered, providing quality, state-of-the-art medical facilities in a low-resource area. Now that's a bright idea.
You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at chcradio.com, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. The show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.